The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One assistant. What's in your wallet?
Hey, what's up, folks? I love the NFL draft. I don't just love the first round. I love the second round, the third round. I love day three of the NFL draft. And I wanted to go in on a deep dive. I want to know which receivers are the best buy, the best value propositions late in the draft. I want to talk about what the top offensive line prospects are. And yes, I want to talk about the quarterbacks. Well, to do so today, I got to sit down with some of the best guys in the business, Bleacher Report's Matt Miller and NFL.com's Lance Zierlein. I believe this will give you some of the best insight, not just about the top five picks in the NFL draft, but through the entire three-day event. I hope you enjoy it. All right, I am super excited to go deep with you guys. Like, I want to talk about who's going to go in the third and fourth and fifth round. I want to talk about who's better between Tyler Johnson and James Proche. I want to talk about deep draft pick analysis. But I think in order to do that, we have to set the stage. We have to set it with the first round. And even at that, we have to probably start inside the top 10 because that'll establish needs for everybody else. So let me ask you guys this. It seems to me from the outside that Tua Tagovailoa is the linchpin of every draft machination thereafter. Matt, I was reading your latest column. You were talking about the media hype for Tua seems to be greater than what you're hearing from scouts and from teams. So the question is somebody going to trade up to three and possibly two to get Tua, or does he drop down?
Yeah, I'm excited to hear what Lance has to say about this. Like, whether it's in an article, a mock draft, a podcast, however I'm talking about it, I try to always clarify, I really like Tua. For me, he's the number two quarterback in the draft, and it's not close. But then you have that, like, what you're hearing versus what you're seeing. And I think that's where, like last year, Daniel Jones, I didn't have him ranked as the second quarterback. I don't think very many people did. But he ends up going top 10 and being the second quarterback drafted. It almost feels like it's that way with Justin Herbert this year where, and I think, like, you know, obviously the COVID-19 has changed things where you're not able to poke and prod Tua with your team doctor like you would like to. Maybe that hurts him a little bit. But it does sound like, guys, there's a little bit of a belief out there that, man, this cat had four first-round receivers. He's got two first-round tackles. Maybe a little bit more of a product of a system since not real big, not a real strong arm. And then you got the three injuries, three pretty significant injuries, at least, that you're worried about.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate. I mean, there's clearly a need for quarterback at one, at five, at six. And so it would make sense that you'd see Tua in there. But, you know, Jedrick Wills is a really good tackle. Mekhi Becton has a lot of upside. I think, you know, we'll get into worse later. But, you know, I'm starting to wonder. I wrote this up when I watched Tua on tape, and I ended up writing him, you know, I think it was late December when I wrote him. And I came away from it, and it's even in my scouting report. I really wondered because there's so many slants the guys take to the house, and there's so many guys running in space wide open. And he operates out of a lot of RPOs, which is very favorable. And he had really good protection a lot of times. And he threw, you know, to Irv Smith last year, who was a good tight end, kind of H-back tight end. And he had Josh Jacobs and now Najee Harris. And there's so many things that work in Tua's favor over the entire time that he's been at Alabama that you do start to wonder how much of it is Tua. And there's great things that Tua does. He's twitchy with his feet, twitchy with his release, things like that. But I think the injuries that Matt referenced, you know, the concern on the hip, I don't know if it's as much with the high ankle sprains, but there's a question about durability. There's a question about his ability to avoid getting hit when he leaves the pocket and then getting through progressions so that he doesn't have to leave the pocket as much. Because ultimately, you don't want him to leave the pocket as much.
So you don't see a demand or a need for anyone to trade up to two or three to get Tua?
No, I really don't, and I'm curious to hear Lance's side of this thing, but it just doesn't feel that way unless, you know, there's enough smoke here in the next 2 weeks that someone can convince the Dolphins or the Chargers that they might also want to trade up. But we're running out of teams that need to trade up to get – you know, we're running out of teams that need a quarterback at this point. So, to me, it does feel like you can sit and wait unless you just – are really hell-bent on making sure you get the guy.
Lance, yeah, you feel the same
way? I'm kind of the same way, actually. I'm starting to think, at one point, I thought three was going to be the sweet spot for Tua, and he does have his workout that he's put out there at all the different teams. From what I could tell, I didn't get to see the entire workout, but from what I could tell, the only thing you can really, the only thing you really nitpick about is that he doesn't, I don't see a lot of lower body drive through the throw, and that's probably because of, the issue that he has, and he's still healing. But he moved around pretty well, and I thought that looked good. Teams are going to want to, they're going to have to take a look at any imaging that his agent, puts together, and they'll get the imaging to the teams that are interested. And then the team doctors and orthopedics can take a look at it and see what they see and make determinations. But teams are very, very fickle when it comes to being able to have their own medical staffs really get a close, fine-tuned look at every little part. They're not going to take any chance on any degenerative conditions. If they feel any concern at all, they're not going to, they're definitely not going to trade additional picks and give that kind of money. So I'm starting to get the feeling that Dolphins at five, if they sit there, if they like them, Chargers could get a look at them at six. And, there's an outside shot that if one of these teams like Herbert or Love a little bit better, that Tua could slip even a few more spots. I'm not saying that's likely, but there is an outside chance that some teams who hadn't even thought about drafting Tua or being able to draft Tua might all of a sudden say, wow, we need to get a contingency together because maybe this is a guy that we need to, piece some picks together and jump up there and get a guy that we didn't think we'd have a shot at.
Well, whoever ends up fourth in that category of the top four quarterbacks, from Love to Herbert to Tua to Joe Burrow, what do you think is the lowest the fourth guy drops?
I have a hard time figuring that out. Just to be like real honest with you, Green Bay at 30 is probably, I would guess, the floor. But without knowing who's going to trade back and projecting things like that, I think it gets tough to find whether it's Jordan Love or I can't imagine it would be Herbert or Tua. That's about where I see the floor being for the fourth quarterback. The fifth quarterback is even harder to figure out when you get to round two. There just aren't many teams that have that need a quarterback. There might be some surprises, where Saints or Packers, or it seems like everything I've heard of the Patriots like Jarrett Stidham, so I haven't even been factoring in a quarterback there.
Lance?
I'm kind of curious about Jacksonville and what they really think about Minshew behind the scenes, if they think, because they got two first-round picks. So if Love showed up there, would they take a shot at him there? Is that the lowest he would go? Is the lowest maybe one of the Raiders spots? Because I know they have Derek Carr. I know they have Marcus Mariota. Are either one of those guys future faces of the franchise? There's also, of course, a chance that there's somebody lurking and waiting to make a move up. And the Patriots are tough because you just don't know with Stidham. I know what they say, but at the same time, Stidham was just, who does Stidham have to throw to now? What's that going to look like? Because there is no Gronkowski. We saw Tom Brady struggled with limited resources. Stidham's struggle is going to be substantially greater unless they really get that running game going. So I tend to think that the Patriots is the farthest a quarterback could fall. And I think if there is a quarterback that falls, it would be Jordan Love. But I don't see him falling beyond the Patriots. And my guess is that, a quarterback may not even fall to the number 20 spot. But it's tough. The fourth quarterback is really, really a tough one. What Matt talked about, the fifth quarterback is very, very challenging. But figuring out where Jordan Love goes, I've heard some buzz about Love to five with the Miami Dolphins, and that they're more than happy to sit him and watch him progress behind Fitzpatrick for a year. They have a ton of first round, cap. They have a ton of draft capital, so they can afford to let him sit and develop. And if that were the case, that would really shake up the draft, especially if the Chargers decided they weren't in love with the board when it came to quarterbacks number three and four. And, that you have to consider Tua, I would think, if you're the Chargers. But what if they like offensive line? What if they drafted a tackle? So it's figuring out these quarterbacks, saying the top four, who the top four are. That's the easy part. Figuring out where the fourth quarterback goes is really, I think, one of the hardest things in this draft.
You want to put, you need four of them in your first round of your mock draft, right? You really want four of them in the top 20. Like you said, Lance, it's real hard, and I have not found a consistent spot for whomever that fourth quarterback is.
So the idea of Love going all the way up to 5 to the Dolphins, that would be stunning. But let's say it doesn't go surprisingly like that. Let's say it goes more traditionally in terms of the way the mock drafts have projected. So, Matt, let's say in the next 2 weeks the smoke does begin to billow and people think, I have to trade up for Tua. What I'm curious about, what it seems to me is the Dolphins are in a much, much better position than the Chargers. And it's not just that they're one slot ahead of the Chargers. It's that if you're the Redskins or you're the Lions, you still want to be able to get your hands on either Isaiah Simmons or Jeffrey Okuda. And what I'm curious from you guys is, do you see somebody else, like maybe Derek Brown, in the same category? What I'm getting at is, if you're the Redskins or the Dolphins, you could trade back to 5 and still get Okuda or Simmons. But if you go to 6 to the Chargers, you run the risk of not getting either of those players. So unless you consider Brown in the same category and you're happy to get one of those guys, the Dolphins have a much better hand to trade up than the Chargers.
Yeah, and they have 14 picks. So it's not even that you're going to get 5. That they're going to probably be more comfortable giving up extra picks. And I think this is a pretty good draft. So you would want, you know, more picks this year. The hard part for me with the Redskins at 2 is, like, there's no way in this world I would trade out of the chance to draft Chase Young. Like, it's unthinkable for me to do that unless you're going to get, like, you know, 3 or 4 first rounders out of the deal. But so I have, you know, Chase Young, Okuda, and Simmons as, you know, pretty special players. I like Derek Brown a lot. I don't feel comfortable putting him in that same tier as them.
No, and I think Derek Brown is the guy of all of them that could end up falling. He is. You know, he's not a special pass rusher from the interior, and typically when you look at the draft profile of big dominant run defenders who are average to even slightly above average with pass rush, those guys typically don't even go in the top 10. So it's easy to believe that he would fall. Now, to your point, Will, if you are the Lions and you trade back, I think you want to have at least 3 players on your board that you would – really, really covet to move back. In a perfect world, you would love it if everyone fell in love with quarterback and either wanted Herbert or Love or Tua or whatever the case may be. But the problem is, if that doesn't develop, if the Tua, we've been operating off of this, you know, the idea that Tua is going to be the coveted guy and that Miami would have to move up to 3 to get him, or the Chargers could move up to 3 to get their hands on Tua. But that would be perfect if you're Detroit, because you could still get a guy that you like a lot. But if that doesn't happen, then I think Detroit's in a tough spot, because I don't know, you know, from there, what do you do? You have a huge need at cornerback. You could just lock in with Jeffrey Okuda. Special traits, well, that's, you know, Isaiah Simmons, and you could certainly use linebacker as well. But this is, I think, another thing that's really hurting the Lions is that because of the restrictions that are created, you know, through the COVID-19, the pandemic itself, it's really going to limit teams that, A, will trade this year, and, B, it's eliminating the ability of agents to create narratives and buzz in the media that help to push some of these potential movements that could happen. And I had a GM tell me this is going to be one of the cleanest, purest drafts in a long time, because – you're going to have to evaluate and make picks, and there's no false rumors. You know, it's going to be harder to really circulate false rumors and leak out there who's visiting who, so that you can potentially manipulate a draft board. You're not going to have that as much this year. So I think that's why we're not hearing as much buzz about trade-ups now.
Yeah, and in a virtual draft, you won't be able to do it in real time as well. It will be harder to pull off trades, I can only imagine, if everybody's mm-hmm. doing this remotely through Zoom. Let me follow up on Okuda for a second. So it seems to me, and look, I'm a guy that reads mock drafts and plays simulation mock drafts. I'm not going to pretend like I'm sitting here breaking down tape. I watch college football, but I can't say I've seen everything that C.J. Henderson has done. But it seems to me that it's Okuda, drop down a little bit, and it's Henderson, and then it's dropped down a lot after that for any kind of quarterback, cornerback like that. Is that the way it is? Like, after Henderson, whoever's next, Jeff Gladney or Jalen Johnson at Utah, it's a big drop-off from Henderson?
Yeah,
it is for me. Yeah, I really like Henderson. I think in a class without Okuda, you'd be happy with him as your number one. I have Gladney third, and then I have, like, Jalen Johnson, A.J. Terrell, Trevon Diggs, Christian Fulton would kind of round out my top guys.
Yeah, there's such a big drop after C.J. I mean, Henderson, really, if you really want to get right down to it, C.J. Henderson is the most gifted of all the cornerbacks, even beyond.
Yep.
I think Okuda has some – he has excellent traits and potential, and I think he is – you know, he's got a better opportunity to make plays on the ball if he really tightens up his technique and his instincts. So I think that's going to come. C.J. Henderson is just pure. Like, he is athletic, he's fast, he's big, he's smooth. It just doesn't make sense that he doesn't have more ball production. But there's no questioning that he has all the physical abilities you would want. And so those two guys are the clear-cut top corners. I think once you get past that, for me at least, I would feel more comfortable with pretty much every single cornerback after that, you know, into the second round. That's not the reality. It's a premier position, so you're going to have, I would think, at least two cornerbacks pushed up into the first round as well. But there's some concerns. There's a little bit more to be concerned about once you get past the first two guys, and I think that's going to be really challenging because teams have cornerback needs. It's a deep wide receiver draft. There's going to be a natural inclination to chase wide receivers with cornerbacks in this draft, but they simply don't match up from a talent-for-talent standpoint. You got two really good cornerbacks, and then it falls off where the wide receiver group is a much more deep and talented group. You just can't chase all the wide receivers that are going to come off the board with, you know, with cornerbacks. It's just not going to work that way this year. It shouldn't, at least from a talent standpoint.
Well, it seems to me
I don't have anyone. I have Okuda, Henderson in the first round, and then the rest of the guys I have a round two grade on. So I'm absolutely with you on that one.
Well, so then the question becomes, if Henderson drops down to the mid-teens for a team like the Cowboys who want to draft a cornerback, there's two position groups that, outside of quarterback, I find the most interesting in the first half of the first round. So, Lance, I'll ask you this because I know you look closely at it. One is offensive line. I mean, Giants, Cardinals, Jaguars, Browns, Jets, all of them need offensive linemen. All of them need to protect a young quarterback. And you've got I read off five teams. There could be more. And you've got four clear top offensive linemen, it seems like. Mekhi Becton, Jedrick Wills, Tristan Wirfs, and Andrew Thomas. I'm fascinated by what the order is, because it seems like everybody has a different order on where these guys go. But how quickly they go and in what order is what my question is.
So, you know, for me, it's really not that hard. For me, Jedrick Wills is a clear-cut number one. He's got great feet. He is physical. He's tough. He's nasty. I think he has the footwork to be able to play on the left side as well. He played on the right side because that was Tua's blind side. He's one of the few guys in this draft that can really unlock his hips and explode and drive block with good technique over there. You know, he's well coached at Alabama. I think Jedrick Wills is the clear-cut first tackle off the board. Mekhi Becton has the size and athletic. He has rare size and athletic ability to play left tackle. You don't see that a lot, a guy who's that massive who can move like that. Teams love and covet big with athletic, because with big, you usually get powerful, and you certainly get that with Mekhi Becton. And I'm not saying he's polished, but he has a lot to work with. Andrew Thomas, you know, believe it or not, when I talk to offensive line coaches around, I think that Tristan Wirfs' hype is a little bit media-generated because of his huge combine. Tristan Wirfs has really good feet. He has the ability to redirect. He oversets too much, meaning too much weight on his outside foot when he sets and he gets beat inside. That's primarily when you see him get beat, it's inside. You rarely see him get beat outside. You don't see people bull rush him a lot successfully, but he does get beat inside more than you like. And he's not a real bendable drive blocker, meaning people want him to be Brandon Scherff, but that's not who he is. He's not the guy who gets up on people and operates with a lot of push and a lot of power. So I think NFL line coaches are going to look at Andrew Thomas, who can be a little less pretty sometimes to watch, but almost more effective because he just has figured out how to get guys blocked. He's nasty. He's played on the left and right side, and he has a mindset that offensive line coaches, and I know this from being in an offensive line coach family, you know, my brother coaches it, my dad coached it in the league. Andrew Thomas is going to check a lot of boxes with how tough he is when he fits into the offensive line room. Tristan Wirfs is a little different kind of guy, and that's something that, you know, isn't going to be talked about publicly, and it's not a slam on him. he's just, I don't think there's going to be, I think there's going to be some teams who just get kind of a different feel on him that then, like, I don't know if he fits into our locker room, depending on, or our offensive line room, depending on, you know, what that O-line room is. But from an athletic standpoint, a body type standpoint, Worfs has it all. From a physical standpoint, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, before Matt jumps in, I was going to say, so I just, to get it clear, you have it Wills, Becton, Thomas, and Wirfs, Lance.
Yeah,
right?
But I have Thomas and Wirfs, like, it's like Judy and it's like having Judy and Lamb. They're basically right on top of each other.
Right, right. So Matt, I mean, the question then becomes, how high do all four of these guys go? Because that's going to dictate what pushes down cornerbacks and receivers for that matter. Because teams like the Jets are going to be going, do we go for the third or fourth tackle, or do we go for the top receiver?
Yeah, I think you're right on there. And it's, you know, most often we say, okay, like if one goes four to the Giants, that's going to change everything, right? But I think the expectation is that could happen, but it's like 50 or 50 if they take a tackle or Isaiah Simmons. So you get to the Browns at 10, the Jets at 11. You look at the Buccaneers at 14, the Broncos at 15. Like, those guys are flying off the board. I would be shocked if the Broncos have a chance to get one of them at 15. And I'm with Lance. I think Jedrick Wills is, like, far and away, like, you just put a period after his name and then you kind of talk about everyone else. Whether you think Wirfs is a guard or a tackle, I know there's been a lot of conversation about that. With Becton scares me the most because, like Lance said, the potential is so tempting because there just aren't many human beings that size who move like he does. But, you know, but there's a lot of holes to the game, too, you know, with, you know, balance and, you know, just being able to play under control. But you got to be tempted by it, dude. I mean, he looks like Bryant McKinney. There's just not many players like that.
I'm fascinated to see how high these four guys go, because to me that'll dictate everything that happens below that. I think the Browns look like, and the Cardinals now both look like they should go offensive line. Will the Giants, will the Jets? Because if they start going offensive line as well, then you start pushing choices down into the teens of, well, do we take Jerry Jeudy now? The question is, how big is the offensive line run to me?
Yeah, and you know, if the Giants were to go offensive line with that fourth pick, then 11 is as far, your fourth tackle will be off the board by the Jets. So that's when a run is going to start there, because the Dolphins have a need at tackle, the Chargers have a need at tackle, the Jaguars have a need at tackle. You've got, obviously, you talked about Arizona, you talked about Cleveland and the Jets. There's just too many teams, and this is a rare opportunity to get a quality plug-and-play starter to have four of them. You just don't want to pass up on that, because it gets a little sketchier once you get past the top four. So I think 11 is the furthest that the fourth tackle goes. And that's why my first mock, I had some pushback. It was in January, but I had some pushback when I didn't have Lamb or Jerry Jeudy, who at that time was, you know, the hot name with the media was Jerry Jeudy. So all the fans thought, well, how do you not have Jeudy in the top 10 picks? And I just, because it's a deeper, because tackle is a print, there's not a Calvin Johnson in this draft. There's not a wide receiver that is a big time wide receiver one. I like Jeudy and Lamb, but it's hard to find good starting tackles. So I figured tackles would be the push, quarterbacks are the push, and then wide receivers will settle in. And that's still how I see it. I think Lamb could go off the board earliest at 10, and I think that's the earliest a wide receiver goes. Or an outside shot at Ruggs. And I say that because at some point the Browns are going to realize Odell Beckham, that's a losing game, thinking that you're going to be okay with Odell Beckham. All the talent in the world is there. He's always going to be problems. He's always a big personality. He's got a huge cap number. And if you draft a wide receiver at 10, which I do think there's an outside shot, then that allows you to have a three wide receiver sets that can be dominant this year, and then you can get rid of Beckham in the offseason.
To me, every one of those teams we're talking about have a young quarterback. It's a no-brainer to me. If these guys are good, that's where I defer to you guys. If these offensive tackles are good, I would rather have an offensive lineman over wide receiver every day of the week for my young quarterback.
And especially, like, this has been called a historic wide receiver class, and it is really, really deep. No, there's no doubting that. You have to go tackle in round one, a receiver in round two. And, like, the Jets at 11, they don't just need a tackle and a receiver. They need an edge. They need a right tackle. They need a corner. And so, you know, a lot of these teams, you know, even the Browns, like Lance said, they need a receiver, they need a safety, they could take a linebacker. So it's just a matter of, we've been told over and over again, anyone who follows football, that offensive tackle is premium. It's quarterback, and then you can decide if it's edge rusher or offensive tackle, but those are the three most important positions. And that's why I agree. I think we're going to see the tackles go before the receivers because of the importance of the position and the depth. You mentioned it, Lance. You don't feel great about Josh Jones and Austin Jackson and Isaiah Wilson and Ezra Cleveland. You feel pretty good about the receivers you could have in round two.
Matt, I saw you writing as well. Let's talk about the receivers. You like CeeDee Lamb, but you don't think he's a wide receiver one.
Well, I worry. I think so much of it, like, it comes in a scheme fit, and I'm not trying to, like, find a cop-out, and I don't want to hedge on it. My concerns with CeeDee Lamb is a lot of contested catches on his tape, which oftentimes points to a guy who can't separate. And Oklahoma's offense did a great job of giving him free releases. Like, this dude, I know you can find a clip of him beating press coverage, but it's not something that he did very often. The Big 12's not exactly known as a great cornerback conference. So I think with Lamb, like, there's just, I'm a little bit worried about how much of the production came from the scheme. And then when he was challenged, how often he had to make contested catches. You know, with receivers, if you're a great route runner, you're going to get open. Michael Thomas ran a 4.56. Probably the best receiver in the game because he's a great route runner when it comes to timing and physicality. Lamb could be that, but I do worry a little bit about that transition if he, for the first time in his life, he has to be press coverage for a whole game.
Let me put this to both of you guys really quickly. So I love that spark, you know, the athleticism. Mm-hmm. It's combining spark with productivity. There used to be a website that did that. They created a T-graph, you know, where you could see who had both the college productivity and combined it with their combine results, which is their spark score, right? And when looking at that, Judy was really poor, right? His combine stuff was low percentile stuff, right? His speed, I think all of his drills, his three cone, all of that. I was looking at that, I was like, everybody says Judy's a great route runner, and I believe that 100%, but with his seemingly poor testing with athleticism, and then I combine that with the, like, I don't know, incredible bust rate among wide receivers. I was looking at it, since 2015, how many wide receiver ones have come out of the first round? And the answer is probably one, Amari Cooper. We'll see if somebody else like Marquise Brown turns into that or whoever. But it just, I sit here and I go, how good is Judy, guys?
Go ahead, Lance.
No, I do think he is a really good route runner. I mean, he's sharp with his routes. You know what's interesting is when you go back and look at Alabama, I've noticed this for a while. The testing, like the explosive testing, the broad jump, the vertical leap, if you look at Calvin Ridley's explosive testing, it wasn't that great either.
Right.
And which I was really surprised at that. And you can look at quite a few Alabama guys and get that, which, you know, always was a little puzzling to me. But I think Jerry Judy has a lot of similarities to Calvin Ridley in that he's got good speed. I think he's got good play speed. When the game is going, when he's in the middle of a game, I think he plays pretty fast. And he's really comfortable with hiding and disguising his route breaks. In other words, you don't see him getting in and out of his breaks, but he can, when he does it, he's not going to give it away. There's no tells at the poker table, but he can snap it off very quickly. He can make his routes very, very sharp. And so he's going to create that separation. CeeDee Lamb is not a great route runner. So CeeDee Lamb does have some issues with separation that I'm concerned about. But Jerry Judy, I'm not sure that he can play outside. I'm not sure he is a true outside receiver. So with Jerry Judy, I think you have a specialized slot who can get you a lot of catches because he is going to get open. But I don't know that he is ever going to be a guy who takes over games and makes as many explosive plays as you saw on the collegiate level. I think he can. I mean, I think he does have that kind of speed when he's matched against certain types of slots. But I still see him more as a wide receiver two who can really up his value if he gets with the right offense that understands how to utilize what he does well from the slot.
Wide receiver two.
And that's what I was going to say.
Wow.
I think scheme matters so much with this receiver class specifically because, you know, there's not a guy who has it all in terms of size, speed, where, you know, there's not a Julio Jones, there's not an A.J. Green, there's not a Calvin Johnson. These are small guys, 6'1", 193 for Judy, 6'1", 198 for Lamb. You know, these aren't big players. To your point about the combine, Will, I've had a hard time with combine numbers this year. I almost feel like you just have to throw them out in some cases because, and maybe I'm just too much of an optimist, it feels like this entire combine, the numbers were bad for everyone. So I don't know how reliable they are with the schedule change and the, you know, the uncertainty about workouts.
All right, I have one more position group I want to ask you about in the first round before we start diving just a little bit deeper. And I have a vested interest in this because, as everybody knows, I'm a Cowboy fan. But I know, Matt, you wrote the Cowboys might be looking at a wide receiver or cornerback, but I can't help but keep looking at edge rushers. We'll see if Aldon Smith turns out. But what I'm curious about is, it seems to me, of everything I've read and what I watched in college football, Chase Young is one level. And then when you drop down, Chaisson from LSU comes with a ton of question marks. Like, I don't understand the lack of productivity in college. I know there's a scheme, and he was asked to do a lot of things outside of just rush the quarterback. But whether or not it's Chaisson, and Matt, I know you have him ranked pretty high, or Gross Matos, or even Zach Bond, who's small, right? He's like 238 pounds. Would you say that after Young, are we looking at a huge drop-off to the next edge rusher, or you really, really like some of these other guys?
Man, I think it's a huge drop-off. And I think with Chaisson, you're right. There are questions, you know, redshirt sophomore who was banged up last year, missed a ton of time, and didn't have a, you know, I think he has 7 sacks this year, and a lot of those were late in the season. I think with Chaisson, what I like is his versatility. Like, you watch him drop into coverage a lot, you know, he squeezes well against the run. So with Chaisson, I'm really intrigued by the, you know, the three-down player you get, like a, you know, an underdeveloped Josh Allen from Kentucky last year. You know, he's not there yet, but that's kind of who he could be. And then I think there is a drop-off from Chaisson to Gross Matos. And then after that, I feel like there's a really big drop-off to, you know, you betting on the medicals of Terrell Lewis, Josh Uche from Michigan, who's really small as well. It's just, it's not the best edge class, in my opinion.
Lance?
Yeah, it's tough to need an edge this year. And there is, I agree with everything Matt said. I mean, there's a huge drop from, well, there's a huge drop from Chase Young to everybody else in this draft to me, but when it comes to Chase Young, I mean, he's in a different class. Chaisson, it feels like because of his build and body type, you feel like you're going to see a guy with 34-inch arms, which those long levers make a big difference as a pass rusher. And yet he checked in at under 33-inch arms, which is a big disappointment to me. Now, one of the reasons, Will, that he had lesser production is he had an injury he sustained in the offseason that he was a little slow coming into the season. I think it was an ankle. And once he got right, one of the reasons that he really came out at the end of the year is he was fully healthy, and he started putting sacks on some pretty good teams. And that's one of the reasons that I pushed him up the board, because what I saw was a guy who he needs to get stronger. He doesn't have the longest arms, which he feels like a long-arm player who doesn't have long arms. But he does find ways to convert his rush from outside in. He understands how to come up under at the top of the rush, which is very important from a counter standpoint. And then, you know, he's a slippery player. He's got that ability to get you the upper body turn, the hip turn, to where he can slither and slide his way into the pocket. And I think that what you saw late in the season is who he is becoming and who he's going to be. So I did like his ascension. Now, Gross Matos, to me, is more of a boom-bust prospect. I love the size. He's 270 pounds. He's got this. He's got that. He's got the loose hips. You see him beginning to figure things out, but he's not there yet. And the question of how long it takes for him to get there is what's going to determine whether or not he can be like a, you know, one of those developmental, you know, Danielle Hunter types who all of a sudden come out of nowhere and they take the traits and they turn it into big time production, or whether he's just going to be, you know, like one of those old school Penn State rushers that don't end up living up to the hype like we've seen in the past, like Courtney Brown type. So once you get past there, I mean, I wasn't in love with Terrell Lewis's tape. Josh Uche, I'm not – what is he? Is he a designated pass rusher? I mean, he's not a full-time 3-4 edge.
Right.
He's not a 4-3 end. He's not really an off-the-ball linebacker. He doesn't have instincts. He's just an explosive guy who – I think you can bring in on pass downs, but when do you draft designated pass rushers? So I've got a big – and I like Zach Bond a lot, but I still think that he's not a 3-4 edge either. I think he's an off-ball linebacker who puts a hand in the ground or rushes standing up on sub-packages on third down. So Man, this is not an awesome year to need edge rush, I can tell you that. And right around where the Cowboys are drafting, there is a group of about three or four teams that could be looking at the same, you know, one or two players being Chase on and Gross Matos and maybe Bond.
If you were looking for a disruptive defensive lineman that's more than a one-down player, and you were sitting there, rank these for me, okay? And you had Chase on, maybe Derek Brown falls. You said that earlier, Lance. I don't know how far you're talking about him falling. And Kinlaw, Javon Kinlaw. If all those guys, those three guys were sitting there, and I know it's edges versus interior defensive lineman, but you're looking for somebody to be really disruptive, and how would you rank those?
Oh, I mean, it's Derek Brown, definitely number one. I'd probably bet on the traits and go Kinlaw too. The tape doesn't say Kinlaw, but the traits say Kinlaw. So I'd probably go Derek Brown, Kinlaw, and then Chase on.
Yeah, it's funny. I have these three guys ranked right by each other. I have it Brown, Chase on, Kinlaw, but I have them ranked 8, 9, and 10. So they're grouped really closely together. I mean, they're incredibly different players, the three of them. With Chase on, you are betting on the traits a little bit, and I don't know how, you know, disruptive he's going to be rookie year. But, you know, with Brown, I think there's a lot of conversation about how you use someone like Derek Brown, who's not going to be a double-digit sack guy, but you're hoping his disruption frees somebody else up to go make some plays.
Okay, let's go a little deeper now. I think we set the stage for the first round. What I like about doing the first round is it lets you know sort of I don't know if teams do this as much as I do it when I play my mock drafts, but like, I don't want to draft that guy in the first round because I've got a deep class there and edges run out quick. So I got to get Chase on now. Otherwise I'm drafting, I don't know, Julian Aquara or whatever his name is in the fourth round. So I want to go deeper now and ask you, like, let's do a position group and you tell me who your buy low candidate is. Like, this guy's a boom. Yeah, I'm going to get him in the third or fourth round. He's going to be worth much more than that. If you're drafting from this incredibly deep wide receiver class, who's the guy you're targeting, Matt, first there?
Oh, wow, put me on the spot. If I had to target, like, third round or later, that's where you want to be?
Yeah.
Can I be a complete homer and take Devin Duvernay? Because I know he's not going to be a wide receiver one, but you could put that dude in the slot. He does not drop balls. He's fast as hell. And I know he only had that 1 year production for UT, but that would be my guy that I would rather have him a little bit higher because I think we've seen the value of slot receivers and guys who just have crazy speed down the field. So that's where I would go.
Matt, you know I'm a homer too, but I watched every game just like you did. I mean, I'm a Longhorn fan, and he's strong. I don't care how tall he is. He's strong, he's physical, he's fast, and he catches everything that comes near him. And I can't speak to his precise route running, but he always seems to find space and catch the ball. So really quickly before Lance answers, if it were on the board for you, Matt, and it was Van Jefferson from Florida or Devin Duvernay, both slot-type receivers, which one would you pick?
Oh, I take Duvernay, and that's not just me being a Texas homer. I worry about Jefferson, you know, really thin frame, didn't produce at Florida, and now we've got some injury questions. So that's a pretty easy one for me.
All right, who's your guy, Lance?
Well, for me, it's first of all, I'd go Van Jefferson all day, every day over Duvernay. So I'm going the other way on that one. And I mean, his route run, he's the finest route runner in the whole draft. If you watch what he did to Stingley out of LSU, it's staggering. And everybody
he's
at LSU,
the only guy that got him. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody at LSU will tell you Van Jefferson's easily the best route runner they faced. The question they had about him is, can he push the ball down the field? Can he work all three levels? I don't really think so. I think he's level one, level two. I think he could be a really good choice route guy from the slot. But the guy that I would target would be, he's dealing with a foot injury right now, would be Brian Edwards from South Carolina. He's big. He runs the vertical routes for you, but he runs the level one routes, and he's very physical. Like, you know, when it comes to contested catches and getting yards after catch, I thought Brian Edwards had a season like a number two this year. I thought he was a second round wide receiver who ended up, you know, hurting his knee, hurting his foot. And so when it was all said and done, I think he's going to fall to late third, early fourth. But I think he's a second-round talent. So your question plays perfectly into my vision for what Brian Edwards is going to be from South Carolina.
Right. I
really like him, Lance. That's a good pick. And I'm with you. But before the Senior Bowl, I was so excited to see him in Mobile and get to see him, you know, with some of those quarterbacks and against better DBs. And then he has to drop out with injury.
then he gets hurt again. So he's going to be a nice steal for somebody.
Well, if we stay in that vein, like big wide receivers, you just both liked Bryan Edwards. I was looking at these. There's other ones all over the board. Michael Pittman's a big dude, USC. Mm-hmm. Chase Claypool, Notre Dame. Peoples-Jones out of Michigan. And then to keep playing the homer game, Colin Johnson's huge from Texas. Which of those guys do you think actually is going to be somebody finds and is a real gold, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I like a couple of those guys. I like Michael Pittman Jr. a lot. I think it's just you got to know who he is and who he isn't. You know, breaking routes, like Lance was saying, you know, I don't think he's going to ever be an exceptional level three guy, but, you know, turn on the Utah tape and watch him dominate those guys. You know, you can see the type of player he can be. I love Chase Claypool. It's just you have to get him in the right system where they're going to have an imagination for how to use him because, yeah, he has great size, he has great speed, but I think you're going to want him, you know, to play some, you know, flex, almost like a tight end, like an Evan Engram. He's going to be very, very good in the red zone. With Colin Johnson, I'll take my homer hat off as being a Texas fan. The dude just couldn't stay on the field. You know, number one, he's not fast, and he couldn't stay on the field. I loved the potential, and anytime he was on, you can tell there was a difference in the passing game with, you know, back shoulder fades and his ability to post people up. But for 2 years, just begging him to stay on the field and couldn't do it.
Yeah, I can't see a world where he gets drafted before the fifth, to be honest with you. And I think he's a 4'6", 40 guy. I think it's clearly Pittman is the best of those three. And I like playing this. I like playing the cluster busters. That's a fun thing to me because I also think that helps. You know, I would change it like this. I would throw UCF's what's his name? Brian
Davis.
Yeah, Davis, Gabriel Davis. I throw Gabriel Davis in there instead of Colin Johnson, and then it gets. I still think Gabriel Davis is the third, but I do think Gabriel Davis has some upside as well. And Paulson Adebo, he gave him work from Stanford this year. I mean, it was bad. If you go back and watch, Adebo made the right move going back into school with that Gabriel Davis tape out there. But I think Michael Pittman got so much better as a route runner from 2018 to 2019. I think he's still getting better. He's got the he's strong. He's got the ability to make contested catches, to own his catch space. But I also love the explosiveness of Chase Claypool. And I came away watching that Claypool tape thinking, you know what? This guy is going to get compared to Miles Boykin because it's Notre Dame, and he's going to test well, and he's a big, big guy coming out of Notre Dame. But they're different. I mean, Claypool's a legit wide receiver where Boykins was more of a tester. And I think Claypool's got a lot of upside, but I think Michael Pittman is more polished than some people probably realize. And I know there's some teams that like him potentially late in the first round. So if he gets to number 40 with the Texans, I think that's as far as Michael Pittman falls. Claypool is a little tougher feel for me because he could be mid second. He could fall to the back end of the second, but Pittman is a guy that could go late first. And I don't think he goes any further than 40.
What's a cluster buster? Guys, you have one group and all together. And
same kind of guys. So yeah. Just like you did it. You went bigs. So right. similar types of players. You've done it, you know, you went cluster busters with your disruptive players. Or
right.
How would you rank this guy, this guy, this guy? That's a cluster buster. And a lot of NFL teams will do that to kind of fine-tune their board.
All right, let's do that with safety, but let's do it the other way around, okay? You guys have – I've seen both of your boards. I've seen everybody. So there's after Xavier McKinney, it's Winfield, Chin, Kyle Duggar, and what's fascinating to me is – I don't know if you had this, Matt, but all of a sudden now, Grant Delpit is coming in after all of these guys. Is that where it is?
Yeah, that's where it is, and especially talking to teams. Like I know one team that has a fourth on Grant Delpit, and – it's crazy. I know the video came out today of the pro day, you know, where he allegedly ran a 4.39. And I think he's a very good athlete. I don't have any questions about that. I just want to know where the effort was this past year. I mean, you watch the national championship game. It's the biggest game of your life, and you're not giving effort running guys down and so many missed tackles. So with Delpit, it's hard. And even the 2018 tape, I think, was a little overrated. But it's just which guy are we going to get? You know, are we going to get the guy who was running around with his hair on fire in 2018 or the guy who looked like he thought he was a top 10 pick and had it solidified and kind of dogged it and took plays off. So I would rather, you know, if my job's on the line as a GM, hell, I'd rather, you know, bet on a Kyle Duggar or a Jeremy Chinn, a guy who's had a chip on his shoulder to try to prove himself at a small school level, exceptional athlete, as athletic or more than Grant Delpit, but they got a little more fire to their game.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if Delpit, I think the earliest Delpit goes is maybe, you know, maybe a team likes him mid to late second. I think the latest he goes is probably third. I've talked to a couple teams who have fourths on him. He's not the public sentiment about him does not match. And that's because he was such a highly regarded guy in 18. He started, and look, guys in the media, Matt, me, whoever, Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, whoever the case may be, the earliest messages that are out there, guys from Draft Network, whoever has the earliest messages, that's what the public starts to lock in on. That's what beat writers, you know, the writers, they're working off of what they have because they're not watching these guys. They're just trying to get some quick information. And so then, and look, Delpit was much better last year. His ball production was much better. He was healthy. When I say last year, I mean 2018. This year in 2019, he ended up having an injury that he was playing through. I think it had an impact on him. He wasn't as confident in coverage. He didn't look very fast to me, but there's really no – a big problem NFL teams have is that he's built like a free safety. His build, his physical build is free safety, but he tries to hit like a linebacker. That's a bad combination because he's not a wrap-up tackler. He is a hitter. He's a striker. And so when you see all of his missed tackles, most of the time, sometimes it's because he's got some hip tightness and he's not as agile laterally to get those wiggly – offense or running backs or wide receivers in space. But a lot of times it's because he comes downhill and strikes hard, but then doesn't wrap and finish. And so he's going to have to fundamentally, and I'm sorry, LSU fans can say all they want, well, he was hurt, so he missed some tackles this year because he was hurt. Well, then why did he miss tackles in 18? He's missing exactly. Tackles because he's got to change how he tackles. He's got to turn into a wrap and roll tackler, become more fundamentally sound, break down in space, and that means he's going to have to completely rework his approach as a tackler. Because this strike as hard as you can business, that's not going to work in the NFL. And frankly, there's too many missed tackles on tape. And NFL teams hate safeties that don't tackle consistently. That's a huge pet peeve. Jerod Holloman had 14 interceptions in 2015, won the Jim Thorpe Award. And you know where he got drafted? Seventh round, because he missed a bazillion tackles.
So, okay, then I want you guys to rank 2, 3, and 4 for me. We'll take Xavier McKinney out of this. I assume he's number one. But what I think is fascinating is 2, 3, and 4 are, it seems to me, two different kinds of safeties. Chinn and Duggar, small schools. I can't pretend to have ever seen a single play they've made, but test well. And you said Matt has a chip on his shoulder in terms of Chinn because he's a small school guy. But on the other side, there's Winfield, who is a small guy, physically small, but with the big last name, but seemed to just make plays everywhere when not testing well. So which would you go, the guy that made a ton of plays or the guy that has all the traits?
Yeah, I would go Winfield. He should have won the Thorpe Award. Like, it's BS that he didn't. I'm a Lance all the way on that. My only concerns with Winfield are, I mean, he missed 2 years with injury. You know, that's the bounce back this year was amazing. I think he had 7 interceptions. He's all over the place. And, you know, everybody wants that, like, honey badger light. I think that's how you play him. And maybe it's just a supersized Quandre Diggs, but that's a pretty good player. It's a pretty valuable guy. So I have it Winfield. And then I actually have Duggar and Chinn just, like, neck and neck for that next spot at safety. And they're pretty similar to me. You know, Chin's quite a bit bigger. He's 6'3", 221 instead of 6'1", 217, but, you know, they're both that prototypical, whether you want to play them a weak side backer or, you know, in the box of strong safety, like they're versatile matchup type players.
I would probably, if I had my own draft board where I could draft them, I mean, if I could stack it according to how I would philosophically, my grades have to be for a variety. I'm grading for a variety of schemes. I'm not grading them for a specific scheme that I am drafting for. I've got to put grades on guys relative to 32 teams. If I were doing it specifically for me, I would have it Xavier McKinney 1. I would probably have it Kyle Duggar 2. And these are all very close, by the way. Duggar, Winfield, and then Chinn. But frankly, a guy that's not being mentioned who I like a lot is a guy out of Utah named Terrell Burgess, who I think can be a slot corner. I think he can be a free safety. He is a terrific athlete. He's extraordinarily smart. and I think he's one of the really safe cornerbacks in this draft. But you're talking about special tester in Chin, and Duggar is an explosive, explosive athlete who I think got bored with his level of competition when I watched him. And so I think he's going to be a different – I think he's going to be a real difference maker once he gets into on an NFL field with NFL players. And I think once it elevates his – you know, elevates his level, I think you're going to see all the physical abilities that he has start rising to the top.
Okay. This is a podcast. This won't air until tomorrow. And I don't want to lose you, Lance, okay, because I have a few more position groups I want to ask you about. But I'm going to give you a little bit of breaking news here and get your immediate reaction, okay?
Yeah.
The Texans have traded for wide receiver Brandon Cooks. They've sent a second-round pick, the 57th pick, to the Rams for Cooks, and a fourth-round pick next year. You were on my show just a few weeks ago. We talked about the Hopkins trade. What does this make you think about the Texans acquiring Cooks?
I mean, this is what happens when you're desperate at a position. A second would be more than enough for Brandon Cooks, who has been around the way. There's no more. I've never seen this before. One wide receiver fetches a first, and then another team gives a first, and then another team gives a second and a fourth. Is no one in on this? Has no one figured out that when a guy is traded three different times, that maybe that's not the guy that you want? I mean, if you're a really good wide receiver, what are you doing on your fourth team in 5 years? I'm trying to figure 6 years. I'm trying to figure that one out. But I don't love this. I don't love this because I do like the idea of getting a wide receiver right now that can help. But, you know, once again, I think it just plays into the Texans going win now, basically. The Texans are saying, we don't want a developmental wide receiver. We want a guy who can plug in right now to go with, because that's what they need, frankly, to go with Cobb and go with Kenny Stills. And so that's what they're doing here. They want to give veteran wide receiver to Deshaun Watson to keep him happy. And so I understand that, but once again, I think around the league, I don't think that would have been the price tag, to be honest.
You could have drafted a lot of these wide receivers we just mentioned with that 57th pick. But you're right.
Or 40th.
Yeah. All right. I figured that might distract you for a minute there. It's Bill O'Brien's going to keep you guessing. That's the thing, man. I mean, I know that the jury's coming back on him, but he keeps giving you a new piece of evidence one way or another every other week.
It's like he just doesn't want to draft. You know, it's like, we got everything virtually. I don't want to do it. We'll just trade all our picks.
I was wondering why I was getting so many text messages. My phone must have buzzed about 14 times in the last 2 minutes.
Okay, I want to ask you about three other things. First of all, let's go cornerback for a minute. After we talked about Jalen Johnson, we talked about Jeff Gladney. There's two guys at cornerback I want to ask you guys about. I know that Matt is down on one of them, Troy Pride from Notre Dame. I find him kind of interesting. I also find Cam Dantzler from Mississippi State interesting. They both have big negatives. Dantzler ran a 4.6 at the combine, and now everybody wonders if he can play cornerback. I think his tape looked better reading all of you guys. Where are these guys, Pride and Dantzler, for you later in the rounds?
I really like Dantzler. I know today that with the video came out that he's running a 4.3, which I do not believe at all. But I still like Dantzler. I think he can carry guys down the field. We actually talked about this on my podcast on Thursday, is that he's one of the few guys that was able to hang with Jamar Chase this past year. So love that about him. So I like Dantzler. I think, you knew what the speed was going in. You know, there's a scouting saying, don't count it twice. I think with Dantzler, if you're going to knock him for speed, well, you should have watched the tape and known that. With Pride, man, I like him. You know, the speed's there. I thought he had a good Senior Bowl. But, I like him as like a round four type player. I have not seen the consistency with him. He hasn't had the ball production. And he's kind of soft at the catch point. Those are the things that I didn't really like about him.
Lance?
So Pride, I just think, is a great athlete who just doesn't make enough plays on the ball. I think he's a tester, and he's a track guy in high school. And I don't see the speed that you see as a tester. And frankly, he did play better at the Senior Bowl, to be honest with you. I thought his practices were much better. But I just the tape to me, I don't trust it. I don't think he's a real aggressive, competitive guy. And I don't really, you know, he'll get overdrafted. To me, he's more of a fifth-round pick, but I think he'll get drafted higher. Cam Dantzler, on the other hand, I thought he was highly competitive. He allowed 3 catches for 21 yards against Alabama and LSU combined. Jamar Chase, he got in his face and pressed him up pretty well, which I think is something we'll be talking about next year when Chase comes out, because I think Chase has some issues getting off press, but that's, we'll save it for next year. And Cam Dantzler, I thought, played to low to mid 4.5s, which I was fine with. When I put my initial grade, he ran a lot slower, or he ran slow. There's no way you can get around that, because he's also a thin-framed cornerback with you know, below-average play strength. But then today he ran whatever. I don't take that number serious, because there's no way Cam Dantzler is in the 4.3s. But I do think he is potentially a low 4.5 cornerback, and if that's the case, I see competitiveness, ball skills, and he has – I know there's some scouts who have been rubbed the wrong way by his personality, to be honest with you, and some don't think he's tough enough in run support. But, you know, I think he's going to go in the third round, but I think he's a guy that could outplay that third-round pick. I think he could play – I think he's a better prospect coming out right now than Lonnie Johnson was, who was a second-round pick by the Texans last year. But Lonnie had these amazing traits. He was big. He was strong. He looked the part. He was long-limbed. But Cam Dantzler, to me, is just a better cornerback. Like, he understands the position and the nuances of ball skills much better than Lonnie Johnson did. But he's not going to get drafted as highly as Lonnie Johnson. So, you know, what do you like? Do you like the testing or do you like the tape? I kind of like the tape for Cam Dantzler. As far as Troy Pride, didn't love the tape for him. Matt can draft him if he wants.
No thanks, I'm good.
He's all right. I mean, I just, you know, he's not a guy that I want starting person.
Agreed.
That's what's interesting is the Cam Dantzler. It feels like everybody's sold on him because of that 4.6, and you guys are both seeing more than what that number represents for Cam Dantzler. That's interesting to me. Let's end where we started. Let's end with quarterback. I'm going to talk about 3 guys. I'll put them to you guys all at once, okay? They all seem to have issues. I want to know if they're starting quarterbacks. Jake Fromm is small, doesn't have a huge arm, right? But he's supposedly accurate and smart. Jacob Eason has a huge arm, but I've read there's some questions about his personality, his demeanor. And then Jalen Hurts. I watched a lot of Jalen Hurts. To me, and I don't have the eye that you guys have and don't pretend to, but I didn't see a guy that worked through his progressions. He threw it to the first read if he was wide open. If not, he tucked it and ran. Those 3 guys, are they starting quarterbacks in the NFL?
Go ahead.
So this is fun to answer. I think I think scheme matters a whole lot, because if Hurts goes somewhere where it's like, hey man, one read and then go, you might be able to do something as a rookie, but you have to keep learning. You know, like, I'm not comparing him to Lamar Jackson, but something like that where year one, we're going to build an offense that suits you, but you have to keep getting better. You know, Deshaun Watson to some extent. We're going to throw out your Clemson offense, but damn it, you better study and get better. I think something like that could work for Hurts. With Eason, I mean, I love the arm. We had him on our show this week. You hear a lot about, you know, he's kind of this laid-back dude who maybe doesn't care a whole lot about football. He got in some trouble at Georgia because of it. The play against pressure for Eason really, really scares me, because, I mean, you watch him against good defenses, and he's terrible. And then with Fromm, I love the football IQ. I think I saw him play in person 3 times over the last 2 years, and just could never reconcile with myself that that's an NFL starting quarterback with where the league is right now. So I think Fromm, and I might be way off from everybody else on this, I think Fromm is going to be a good backup who could maybe be a spot starter, but I just don't see the physical tool for him to be more than that.
Yeah, I see Fromm. To me, Fromm is the one. I think Fromm could be the guy who has a long-term career as a backup and potential low-end starter if everything around him is right. But Jalen has all the intangibles. He has the leadership. He's physical. But Jalen, you just get the sense that, and I'm with you, Will, I don't see him get through progressions quickly. He doesn't work on time. He doesn't throw with anticipation. It's all on there. You can see it in Alabama. You can see it at Oklahoma. It's not even a discussion point. That's just a fact. Has mm-hmm.
you know, forces guys to break stride sometimes with his deep balls. But Jalen's one of those guys that he still finds ways to make plays. He's phenomenal in the locker room. He's incredibly strong and physical. Jalen, as long as he's on the right team, he's not Taysom Hill. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not a pocket passer. But you just have a feeling that he's going to get it figured out in some way, shape, or form. I just don't think it's as a winning starting quarterback in the NFL. With that said, you know, I still think there's a place in the league for Jalen Hurts. I just think it needs to be in the right particular – you know, I think it needs to be in the right situation. Fromm is an all-day, every-day, super smart backup quarterback to low-end starter who lacks the traits to make plays. He's got to have things on time. He's got to have everything around him needs to be optimal. When I watch Jacob Eason, there are times where he looked like Carson Palmer. And you can see, and it's one of the reasons why Bruce Arians is probably going to be sniffing around on him in the second round. But when you see him, you know, he looks like Carson Palmer. And then when the pressure in the pocket starts to mount or even starts to hint that there may be some pressure, he turned into Brock Osweiler. And so it was very difficult because he's got this great arm. There are times where you see an NFL starter, but I can't get past when he gets to a second read, when he gets past the second read and he gets to the other side of the field, when he's reading right to left, there's a mechanism inside of him where he will turn his back to the pocket and just roll out over the top of the left tackle. It's something that's ingrained in him through no coaching, I can promise you that. And that's a big concern for me, because if you don't play with poise as an NFL quarterback, you cannot be a winning quarterback in the NFL. You just can't, because teams are going to heat you up. They're going to show you pressure and back out. They're going to disguise pressure late. And if you can't handle that mentally, if you can't handle that from a poise standpoint, I don't care what your traits are. I don't care what your arm talent is. I don't care about any of that stuff. You're going to be judged on how you do in the most difficult situations. That's who the NFL, that's what the NFL quarterback is. What are you when it's at its hardest? Not what are you when it's at its easiest, because it's rarely going to be at its easiest.
All right. And that's what I love, like, not to take it back to Joe Burrow, but, like, that's why I love Joe Burrow. You could talk about how, oh, he doesn't have a great arm and he had all this talent around him. You watch that dude when the pocket starts to break down or when there's pressure, even just big moments, and his poise is so amazing. Or when he gets rocked in the face by UCF and he gets up and he dusts himself off and it starts this amazing, you know, 2019 that he had. So, sorry, not to make it about Burrow, but that's so perfectly said, because that's what you love about players like that.
Oh, his poise is ridiculous, and to the extent that I wondered if he's overly cocky. But it doesn't seem that way. It just seems like he's just absolutely cool as a cucumber.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I like that cockiness. There's the Baker Mayfield cockiness, which can cross the line. And then there's a Joe Burrow cockiness where you almost sense a little bit of a hint of a smile is coming, where he's got a smirk. Mm-hmm. If you doubt him. And, you know, I have certain doubts about him physically, but I've just seen this too much. Guys who have intangibles, guys who throw with timing and accuracy, like, these are the kind of things that all-time greats are made of. And I'm not saying Joe Burrow's an all-time great, but I can't be so blind to the fact that he has certain elements in his game. I mean, there's a reason why Tom Brady became Tom Brady, that Joe Montana became Joe Montana. They weren't physically gifted, but they had the it factor, which is really just intangibles. And that is what – there's no way to deny it. I mean, Burrow has that stuff.
No, I like you bringing up Baker Mayfield, because I'm a big believer that cockiness is often a disguise for insecurity. And I really like Baker. But I wonder sometimes now, is all of that a big cloak for actually insecurity? And I wondered the same thing about Burrow. But I agree with you. There's that hint of that smile, and I think it's just – almost like a serene confidence with Burrow that is what the greats have. But it's a fine line. It's a fine line to distinguish. Are we looking at somebody who's faking it or is real on this confidence?
I think he's
That's
real.
Fair.
I think he is. Everyone you talk to loves the guy. And like with Baker, we used to joke and call him the Pied Piper, because, like, players loved him. You could, like, talk to coaches who were kind of tired of his act. With Burrow, it's the complete – like, I mean, the players love him. Coaches do too.
All right, fellas, I know I kept you for a long time. I've enjoyed it. I could talk to you deeper about about.
Never got to Tyler Johnson, dude. I'm disappointed. I was going to talk about all those drops.
Okay, so slot. James Tyler Johnson or James Proshy? You go real quick, Lance. Which one?
I would actually go small lean to. You know what? I'm going to go with the ball skills. I'll go Proshy.
Matt,
I would too, and I mean, I'm sure Lance has seen some of this. I take more heat from Tyler Johnson fans on Twitter than anything I've ever experienced in my life of 10 years doing
really?
This. God bless the Minnesota fans. They hate me. Yeah. Like, they'll find, like, old takes where I was wrong about a player and be like, you're going to be wrong about Tyler Johnson again. He's slow and he drops the ball a lot. And I said this in like, November, and people got mad at me. But scouts were coming in from the road or, you know, calling me after the school visit saying, like, it's not that he has an arrest record or he's failed the drug test, but the football character is not that good. And I know, like, the mayor made it Tyler Johnson Day in January. I had to hear about that on Twitter. But what scouts say, and I trust these guys, you know, they're in there talking to the coaches and everybody. That's our job, right, is to talk to those guys. And you know, you hear it a lot. Football character is not where you want it to be. So, when Tyler Johnson gets drafted, my mentions on Twitter are going to be more of a nightmare than they normally are.
Well, I appreciate it, fellas.
Round, make sure and say hi.
It's been. I kept you guys for an hour, and I really honestly could do defensive line. We talk about Neville Gallimore and all those guys too, but I've kept you for a long time. I love it. I love the fourth and the fifth round as much as I love the first. And I appreciate you guys giving me so much time to break it all down.